It is with excitement that I get to share with you that the Leukemia Foundation has developed a new resource. This resource is called the Online Support Service, where it provides a wealth of services to assist a person living with blood cancer throughout their patient journey. So whether you're a patient who has just been diagnosed, in treatment or in survivorship, this service provides access to targeted learning modules, a suite of amazing services and online programs. And you also have the ability to chat with an experienced blood cancer support coordinator at just one click. It gives people a personalized and intuitive way to learn about important topics, including what to expect beyond treatment. This service is simple to use and is filled with content curated by the Leukemia Foundation for people with any type of blood cancer. It notably features a digital energy coach to help patients manage fatigue. So jump onto our website and look up our new and exciting product called the Online Blood Cancer Support Service. Hi, and welcome to the Leukemia Foundation's podcast, Talking Blood Cancer. My name is Kate Arkadiff, and my role at the Leukemia Foundation is a blood cancer support coordinator. We provide emotional and practical support to people living with blood cancer and their loved ones. Our support is offered throughout the many different stages of a blood cancer journey. While listening to this podcast, we will share the stories of people we have connected with who have faced blood cancer so that you, our listeners, can gain insight, find purpose, and take inspiration. The Leukemia Foundation acknowledges the traditional owners of the country throughout Australia and recognises their continuing connection to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. This story may contain content that some listeners may find difficult and challenging. We encourage anyone listening to take care of their own mental health and well-being. The purpose of this podcast is to share the real-life stories of people living with a blood cancer, and any discussion of medical treatments is not an endorsement. We encourage you to seek the advice from your treatment team if you have any questions regarding your diagnosis, side effects, or treatment. If you would like to talk to someone, or even if you would like more information on our services or on today's episode, please feel free to contact 1-800-620-420 and someone will be able to connect you with your local blood cancer support coordinator. In today's episode, I'm speaking with the incredible Esther Zhu. Originally from Shanghai in China, Esther was feeling settled and content in her new life in Melbourne when she was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2016. It was a doctor's visit that changed her life forever. Not only did Esther have to deal with the physical aspects of a blood cancer diagnosis, she also had to deal with the emotional and cultural complexities. Esther gives light to the struggles she faced throughout her blood cancer journey and explains how she now sees her diagnosis as a positive turn of events in her life and how it helped her connect with her authentic self. So, let's get into today's episode. Hi, Esther. Thanks for coming on today. So what kind of made you go to the doctor? Were you unwell? Were you just had some lumps? Or what was it that made you go, oh, something's not quite right here?
Yeah, it's actually interesting, Kate. Early 2016, because before I also experienced some autoimmune symptoms. So finally, early 2016, my autoimmune symptoms get settled. And at that point, I start adapting healthy life habit. But then just a couple months later in March, I start feeling the cramps in my stomach. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like a needle pain here and there. And then I went to do a blood test. And then the results shows that I have Helicobacter infection, which is quite common in most of the population. Like if you eat some food, maybe you can get that bacteria. So I went to see a GP, and then GP said, give me antibiotics. And he said, by taking these antibiotics, 95% of the issues, cases will be gone. So don't worry, it's quite common to have this infection. So that was in April, and I take this antibiotics for a couple of weeks, and it's actually getting settled down. And I remember 1st of May is one of my best friend's wedding in China, and she asked me to be a bridesmaid. So I flew back to Shanghai for 4 days to be, you know, to be her bridesmaid. But then on the return flight to Melbourne, I start feeling that cramps again, and this time getting worse. I'm so lucky it happened, the diagnosis happened after the wedding, you know, otherwise I can't be the bridesmaid. So the cramps get worse, and then I went to see the GP again. And then GP told me, asked me, hey, do you want to have another antibiotics? I don't know why at that time there's a voice inside of me say, no. I said, you told me the first antibiotics can kill it, but now it doesn't work. Try another antibiotics. I felt I need to like investigate it in more. That's why I asked the GP, I said, what else I can do? And he said, you can do a gastroscopy. I was very scared with gastroscopy because when I was little, I saw my mom did it in China. At that time in China, they don't have anesthetic. Anesthetic. That's why I could see mom has a lot of pain. So I always trying to avoid that. But I don't know why this time I told the GP, said, yes, I'm going to give a go. So I went to see my gastro specialist. I've been seeing him for my autoimmune issues. And I remember it was a Wednesday. So I did a gastroscopy, and immediately he showed me a photo. And I saw that photo. It's like a kind of a volcano mountain on the Mars. There's a lot of holes, like a little holes on my stomach. And immediately I didn't feel anything, but he said something to me. He said, Esther, come to see me on Friday. Because I know he normally don't have clinics on Friday, but he told me to see him first thing on Friday. And at that point, I realized something could get wrong. But at that stage, I was always reasonably healthy, and I could never link cancer with me, especially at a very young age. So I never thought about cancer. So Friday morning, I was coming to see him. He was a little bit late with his appointment, and I was waiting outside at the reception, and I was so nervous and shaking, you know. And finally he came, and I went to see him, and he looked at my report, and and then he popped up this kind of a most hilarious questions that I've never heard in my life from a doctor. He said to me, he said, oh, Esther, I have a good news and a bad news for you. You know, what news you want to hear first? You know, Kate, at that kind of nerve-wracking moment, and the doctor give you a choice. And what would you
choose? What do I choose?
So because I was so scared, and I said to him, I said, you know, please tell me a good news first to make me feel comfortable.
Yeah. But
then he decided to say, hey, I tell you the bad news first. And I was very upset. I said, then why you get me to choose?
Yeah.
And then he gave me this diagnosis. He said, Esther, you got a non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And he told me I got a non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And straight away I asked him, is this cancer? He said, yes. And I was shocked, but not overly shocked, but I felt something. Maybe in my mind I have already expected something. So I was shocked, but then I never asked him. I say, okay, cancer is already a worse news to me. Is why you say this also a good news? And he said, so I have a non-Hodgkin lymphoma on my stomach. It's called a gastric lymphoma. He said, he said 90% of people having cancer on stomach is stomach cancer, and only 10% will be lymphoma. And the lymphoma, in general speaking, has a better chance to cure than stomach cancer.
Right, okay, yeah.
And from that bizarre first appointment, that cancer diagnosis, I always had that belief in my mind that I was so lucky, you know, I got gastric lymphoma instead of stomach cancer. So this is always kind of in my mind since that day one of my cancer journey. So, yeah, so that's my diagnosis story.
Wow. And it, as you said, you were just going about life being, you know, young, fit and healthy and implementing all these, you know, regimes. And she said, like, I think you said you were getting healthy and whatnot before the diagnosis. And then to be lumped with a diagnosis, that just must have, as you said, you felt like you almost knew that when she walked into that room that, you know, something was off. But a cancer diagnosis, as you said, was the last thing that you were expecting.
Yes. Sometimes, Kate, you know, like especially going through those cancer health challenges, you felt, okay, there's something getting better, but then another big wave kind of drawn you.
Mm-hmm.
But then the natural human kind of capabilities or even like a cancer that you want to live, so you will try to stand up again to overcome that wave. So it's kind of constantly walking, sometimes in the dark, and you don't know what could happen next, but you just have to keep going. And, yeah, at that time I thought, oh, wow, there's another one now. It's a bigger one. Now I have to deal with that for now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. One of my wise my wise mentor says, and she's always said it, you know, when we're faced with the problem as humans, you know, we can't go around it, we can't go under it, and we can't go over it. We just have to go through it. And yes. That's very much what, as you're saying, is you looked at it as, okay, I just have to walk straight ahead and go through whatever the journey it is.
Yes, and also I made a decision is at that time, you know, in my workplace, a year ago, before I diagnosed, we also had a colleague who eventually, unfortunately, passed away, but he chose to not to tell his cancer news to other colleagues in the office. Of course, the managers, directors knew, but he chose not to tell us. But we can all see that, but we are too scared because he hasn't told us. We are scared to ask him. And I could feel that tension, that pain, that suffering on his face without expression. So immediately after I diagnosed, I made a decision that no matter what, whoever my colleagues, my friends here ask me, you know, what's going on, how's going on, because I took days off to do checks. Everyone knows, you know, I go through health checks. So whoever asks me what's wrong with me, and I'm going to tell them I've been diagnosed with cancer. And it was so very heartwarming when you tell people that, you know, you're not well, you're going through cancer now. And everyone, you know, they hug me, they holding your hand, say, you know, we are here supporting you. So immediately it kind of removed like a lot of internal blockage within me that I can openly face. I can openly share things with my colleagues, and I can also receive the help from others. So that's the decision I made, is to disclose
And do you think that that also helps you accept where you were at with the diagnosis of, yes, I've been diagnosed and I have to move forward, and I've got this village of support around me that I know if I need to call on for emotional or physical support, that you have people behind you backing you and barracking for you to help you get through?
Yes, definitely. I think up to, you know, go through my cancer treatment, that journey, I received a lot of help from my friends, definitely from friends here, from my mom, from the workplace. Yes.
Yeah. And so I know that you've told me previously that you have family in Shanghai. So gosh, how was that phone call? What did you make a phone call? Did you tell your parents directly, or how do you deliver that news?
Oh yeah, that was the hardest thing, thing ever in my life, because
I could imagine, you know,
as a single child, I hold a lot of expectations to be able to support my parents when they're older. I'm their pride. You know, I've been achieving a lot and they are really proud of me. So that's why I always only tell them the good news. And yeah, I hardly ever tell them that the bad news. But suddenly these things, it's like a bomb to them. So I've been...
So is that, sorry, is that a cultural expectation that, you know, that many children feel in China, that they have this expectation and responsibility to, you know, I guess live up to their parents' dreams and desires? Is that a cultural...
Yeah, it's a cultural thing. And the other thing is, as a Chinese, we also have a tradition that the kids will, like, support the parents, you know, look after parents when they're old. So my parents couldn't bear that they grow older without their daughter.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a big hit for them.
Okay.
And they also will.
So to deliver that phone call would have been huge, because knowing all of that and going, oh, I now have to tell them that I've been diagnosed with cancer.
So I got diagnosed by the end of May, I think 31st of May, I got the exact diagnosis. And my birthday is middle of June, so I've been, and my chemo start in July. So I've been procrastinating, you know. I said, at least let me have a great birthday. So after my birthday, I said, oh, I can't really, you know, I can't, this is too big. I can't really hide news to my parents this time. So I actually ring my best friend, one of my best friends in Shanghai. I say, hey, can you come to my home and to make sure my dad is also there, because I worry my mom will faint when she hear the news. So I said, make sure, find a time when both my parents came and they deliver the news. So I was actually telling her, say, because I ring her on Sunday night, and I said to her, tomorrow is a working day, you don't need to do during work days, and you do it at weekends. So that means they're giving me another week.
Yeah.
I say, no, this is so important. I'm going to take annual leave tomorrow, and I'm going to go to your house. So Monday, my friend came to my house, and the whole morning on Monday, I was at work. I was keep checking
very
my
anxious.
Phone, anxious. And then at lunchtime, my friend sent me a text message, said, you know, I've delivered the news and your parents want you to call home. So I was calling home and my mom picked up the phone. And I'll never forget the first thing my mom said to me, said, we are family. We will go through this together. Mm. And at that time, I cried because I felt all the heavy loads on my shoulders over the past years. You know, I couldn't express myself, like, all these, you know, things, not good news. I can't express to my parents. Finally, I can truly express, you know, I can have an open conversation with my parents. I can tell them that I'm not good, I'm not well, instead of always pretending or to creating that fake, perfect, always good image. So I was suddenly crying a lot. And then also the other thing I realized that before I ring home, I told you, Kate, I always had an impression is my parents couldn't stand up with this news, or they would be, you know, crying or something. But then from my mom's voice, I could feel that strength, that power from my parents, even they are older. And I realized that I can never underestimate my parents. So,
and their strength.
The strength.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after that, my mom get a temporary visa, and she fly over to Melbourne to look after me during my treatment. So,
Wow. So what, I mean, you know, before you told them, like, I imagine, did you ever think that she would feel that she needed to come out and help support you? You know, did you think that she would take that step to come out and be with you, or were you unsure if she would come out and be your carer?
I'm always sure my mum will come here.
Yeah. And that was her first lines to you, wasn't it? Is we're family and we will get through this.
Yeah, and that's where I felt the strength from my parents that, yeah, you have the support from your family, from my mum and dad. And
The belief that you can do this, you are strong enough within yourself to withstand the treatment and withstand this diagnosis.
Yeah, I always have an inner knowing, Kate, throughout my treatment, it was through my chemo. I always have a knowing that I can get through this.
Yeah, you always knew.
I always knew I can overcome that. Yeah, this is something I'm very sure. Even a lot of times I could be overwhelmed or clouded with fear, doubts, but I always knew that. Yeah.
Yeah. Your inner belief was really strong.
I probably not really listened to myself a lot at that time, but for this I'm very sure.
And so did your family, like, once they received that news, you said your mum got on a plane, but did they tell extended family over in China that what you were going through and why your mother had to leave to come to Australia, or did they just not talk about it back home?
They actually, first of all, they choose not to tell my cancer news to my family. And I think there are a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is my mom, you know, because I was very young, and my mom doesn't want other people's, you know, like showing victims on me.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I personally think is because there's a little bit of the cancer belief around, you know, in my family. Later on, I read a little bit also in our culture, we hold some beliefs. For example, as far as I know, like, one of the beliefs is somebody has a cancer, it's a karma, bad karma. That means this person can do something bad in his maybe early life, or can be his family has done something bad, and that become a karma to their, you know, children or descendants.
Yeah, right.
And at that time, our family, you know, we have my grandparents runs a business. Mm-hmm. So that's why the name of our family is important.
Yeah.
So my mom choose to, you know, not telling others, so people don't have any suspects or any saying to say that, oh, because something wrong with, you know, grandparents doing business or something wrong with themselves.
Right.
And then their kids has to, you know, go through this.
Yeah, wow. Am I right in saying that, you know, with that kind of belief, do they feel that a cancer diagnosis can bring shame upon a family? Is that something bad has happened, or someone has done something bad in a previous life or before? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think mostly they feel ashamed or worried that other people will perceive us doing this. And my mom will always say to me, say, we're a good family. Why we have this? You know, we have been always honest in what we're doing, running our business. Why we do this? Why you have this illness?
Yeah.
And,
So with that, and I guess that stigma around cancer, was it hard? Like, how did your parents continue to support you? You know, were they open and wanting to know about treatment and how you were going and tests and engaging with what was going on? Or did they just kind of ask you quickly and then, move on?
My parents can't really face cancer. even 4 years now, my mom never believed I had a cancer. My mom always saw it's a misdiagnosis. And she
even still.
Still now. And she can't even say that word, cancer in Mandarin Chinese. She can't say that word because they choose not to see it. So that's why when my mom, when I come over for the treatment, and because it's a lot of decision, it's quite critical to life or death, they're scared to see or to help or in a way to. So they just, my mom very clear, my mom says, you do whatever you think you should do and I support you by cooking you meals or washing. So basically that she said, that's basically my role. So she doesn't really want to talk a lot about cancer. Even every time during the treatment I have to see oncologist, my mom will just say, you go to see it. You tell me later, I can't go there. So
did she ever go to the hospital with you and sit with you and while you had treatment?
During chemo, yes, she come with me. But when I have to see doctors to see the results, she's scared. She was scared to go there. Yeah.
And how did she cope seeing the amount of people in chairs hooked up to chemotherapy? Was that confronting for her, or was she okay to see that?
She's okay to see that, but it's also at the beginning she was not. And I felt my mom didn't express her worry a lot, but I could feel she has a lot of worry inside.
Yeah. You know, Esther, I just can't imagine, you know, how you would have felt with the weight of, you know, your parents being somewhat open and honest about your diagnosis, but then also protecting the extended family and friends from the news of what you were going through. And it just being so different to how you approached it here in Australia with your friends and your community that you had created in Australia. Was that hard for you to accept that they just dealt with it so differently to how you felt was the best way to deal with it, by being open and honest with everybody?
Yeah. And during my treatment, it was quite easy in a way, because the only way I focus is to get well. Finish the treatment. So I haven't, you know, by cutting the connection back home with China is really, really hard. And especially, you know, initially I didn't tell my friends. So like some friends want to come over and I have to make lies, say, oh, you know, I'm busy or I'm not, you know, I'm on business trip, you can't come. And at a stage, like, even what makes me heartbroken is my grandpa passed away during my mom's stay with me. But my grandpa didn't know I had a cancer. And my grandpa want me to go back home to be with him, but I can never. And I can never tell the truth. And this has been regretting for a really, really long time. At one stage I felt maybe my grandpa would be resenting me. Yeah. And that's why I felt it's so important to, not hiding the news. That's what I felt now, because just a lot of the consequences, even I believe the way my parents doing that is to protect me from a good intention, but sometimes I start questioning about, what could be the consequences? It could be harder, and something could, maybe I could hold that guilt for many, many years.
Yeah.
But I was also lucky because although I was isolated from the connection back home, but I had a really, like you said, a very close group here in Australia supporting me. Like my housemate, she's always there for me. And she is one of the first people, friends, to allow me to express my emotions. For example, during the treatment, a lot of time I want to cry because I couldn't understand or, you know, why I be like that, and I don't know the future, and I was scared about this, and I cried in front of my mom. But every time mom said to me, say, you need to be positive, and you need to be strong, and don't cry, and, you know, have smile, and that's how you can feel better. But at that moment, I just want to cry, and that's how my housemate has helped me a lot to actually acknowledge and express, to allow myself to cry in front of, you know, my housemate. So that's really important. And I have other friends, they will bring her kids, another friend bring her little kids with me, you know. And workplace has been really supportive. They come to see me. So I think I'm really grateful for everyone here in Australia, you know, the friends, the people I met, the support they give me. And it helped me a lot.
It sounds like this diagnosis really made a shift in your soul, and it made a shift in the way that you express yourself and thought about the way that you can express yourself. Because it sounds like, you know, back in China, that you, as you said, you don't talk about the bad, you just be positive. And even by your mum saying, as soon as you begin to cry, no, just think positive. That you now being, you know, exposed and living in Australia, seeing, oh, well, the way of being able to be open and positive, you know, express your emotions, good, happy, sad, angry, fearful, can really be so healthy for the soul and so healthy for yourself.
That's so true, because I think by expressing ourselves, that's the, because I always believe, Kate, my belief is our, you know, a lot of emotional baggage, it can potentially doing harm to our body, change the chemistry within our body. And over the years, it can lead to some physical illness. Yeah. So I think it's really important, especially during this cancer journey, to really express our emotions, because we need to clear that. Then that's when we can start allow healing to happen.
Yeah, I've heard that many of times, that, you know, people believe that by building things up, whether anger, resentment, trauma, and not, you know, tapping into it, how that can lead to illnesses down the track. And I think that especially, you know, I've sat in front of many people with a diagnosis of a blood cancer, and, you know, how they can be so fearful to talk about the things that frighten them, or to ask questions to the doctor because they're fearful of the answer, or they're fearful, or even a carer asking questions because they're fearful that it may upset the patient or whatnot. And I think there's something really valuable to learn within your story of how, if we can be honest and open and, I guess, you know, willing to talk openly, that can just be so powerful and such an emotional release as well for everyone.
Yeah, and the other point is, when we go through cancer, it's important to have the support. But if, as a cancer patient, if we can't allow ourselves to start talking about, to sharing about how we feel, I used to have a mindset is people won't understand what I've been through. But now I think about, if I can let them know how I've been through and how I felt, maybe you also allow others coming to you to support you, because people want to support you, but they just don't know how. So if I can allow this thing happen, and then to willing, then the support, they will come. So I think, and also I felt, I want to share a little bit, is the first encounter with my oncologist during the final diagnosis, because I got, so the gastro specialist referred me to the hematologist. Mm-hmm. And I remember very clearly is the end of the, so I was in a private hospital to do all the checkups to to determine the staging of my cancer,
yeah,
the exact staging. And I remember when, before he came, and I had started reading all the booklet of lymphoma, you know, I've been highlighted, I have a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And you just mentioned patients normally very scared, fear to talk to the doctors. But what I experienced is actually very interesting. Is I remember that day the oncologist coming to deliver the final news, and I was very fear, scared, and nervous. So he started telling me all the, you know, my staging and what a treatment I want and when I should come, what I should notice. So he talked about all these things about 15 minutes. And then he finished, he said, okay, Esther, and I see you, you know, during chemo or whatever. And he was about to leave. And I don't know when I will have this courage. And I hold that booklet. I say, hang on, doctor, would you mind stay a little bit longer? I said, I have a question for you, because now is the most critical time of my life, and I want to understand more about my cancer. And he was a little bit surprised.
How brave of you to do. Oh, that, and from a blood cancer support coordinator, that makes my heart sing, that you were feeling brave enough and strong enough to take back that power in that appointment and ask questions for you and for your soul. Oh, that makes me very happy.
You know what, Kate? And then he stayed for another 30 minutes, and I have so many questions. He didn't, because I believe most of the oncologist doctors are so nice. They want to help you. So he actually was very patient to answer all the questions I have. And at that moment, like you said, I had a power within me. I said, okay, you know, instead of always being scared to doctor, you know, I can actually have my power, and I can sit on an equal space with my doctor, and to get the doctors to work together with me on a cancer project, to involve him on board. But I felt I am the person actually steering the ship, because it's my life.
Yeah.
And I just felt so much power after that first consultation. And so this is something I want to share.
God, Esther, I think that that is so powerful. And I think that you just beautifully explained how it is so important, because, you know, we do see doctors as the higher playing field within, you know, the cancer journey, and they have such an important job and role in that space. And I think you're right. It's actually the patient is the one steering the ship. I mean, the doctor can give all the advice and prescribe treatments and help with side effects and things like that, but it's actually the patient's choice to jump on board and which way that they would like to go, you know. And I think, as you say, it's really important for a patient to gather all the knowledge, to be brave, to stand in that power and to ask those questions, because we all know knowledge is power. And by having as much knowledge on board, it helps us direct the ship in the best direction for us as a person.
Yeah, and Kate, I have another personal message to all the listeners is, you know, as a Chinese, a lot of, because I was, when I was working in the local cancer hospital as a volunteer for Chinese, and a lot of Chinese patients, we tend to say, if they are not clear with something, they say, oh, don't worry, it should be all right, and we don't want to bother the doctor. No, especially because it's important. It's something you're not clear, and maybe make another appointment with doctor. Don't let that slide, because you need to be clear. So don't ever feel bad or, you know, to find more, because this is really something, your life, and we need to take responsibility. We need to be clear, and don't ever worry about bothering doctors, that their time is precious. No, our life is worth it as well.
Yes.
So,
I always say to people that you do have to be your own advocate. you know, you have to, as a patient, as a carer, you were constantly needing to be your own advocate to push your own agenda of your needs and your side effects. And if something's not working for you or you've questioned something, talk to your team, talk to your doctor, talk to your nurses, your coordinators, your social workers, your psychologists. Talk.
That's so important. And also, yeah, work with doctors and even in my radiation.
So you had to have radiation too? Yeah, I had radiation.
And because, you know, I come from engineering background, I'm doing design. And my radiation oncologist, he's so nice. But first I put a request. He sent me a draft about where the radiation is, because my spot is stomach. So that means the light will influence, for example, my chest, my liver, you know, all different angles. Mm-hmm. Then I asked him, I said, you know, I have some weakness in my liver. Can we do this? So we actually co-design, because I also have a design back. We actually co-design, and he agreed the best mapping for me. And that's what I want to say to the listeners, is particularly going through radiation, something like that. If you can get doctor to tailor your situation as much as you can, that would be the best outcome.
Wow. How amazing is that, you know? And I think that's an example of, you know, you brought up the fact that your liver had
autoimmune liver, so yeah. The liver is not really strong.
Yeah, so by you, again, presenting that to the radiologist to go, on, look, I would like you to figure out a different way, because I don't want to, you know, damage my liver even more. That can, for some people I hear, that it can just be so annoying that you consistently have to tell your story again over and over to different people. But I think trying to flip that thought, instead of it being irritating, going, actually, no, that's ensuring I get the best care and ensuring that everybody is knowledgeable on my situation and ensuring that I get the best treatment or outcome for you. That meant co-designing. How incredible is that? I've never heard that, you know, a patient being able to help co-design their radiation treatment plan. But for you, that was the best outcome, because you, again, openly and communicated that your liver would need some buffering.
Yeah. So that's that's something I find really important for my cancer journey, is also by working with doctors. In this way, you actually build a closer connection with your doctor as well, because it's two-way interaction. So yeah.
But as you said before, you know, you wanted to feel like you were working with your doctor on a project, because that was very familiar with you, with your line of work. And what a way. So after you had chemotherapy, you had radiation, what was recovery like for you after that? Did you return to work? What happened for you after treatment?
Recovery after that was really hard. As I felt survivorship is the start of the survivorship is the hardest part of my journey, especially emotionally. I went back to work straight away, and I was doing sales. And the before cancer, work has been the biggest part of my life. Actually, I put all my value, all my worth on life. And when I went back to work, and you know, I can no longer, my body can no longer serve that fast pace. I can no longer, like a salesperson, running around.
Yeah.
And that actually hit my confidence or who I am a lot.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is during treatment, you know, you have a goal that I want to live. And then you have all the support team. You have a clear schedule, chemo, radiation, treatment schedule. But then during the transition to the recovery first, you know, your friends not ringing you that often, say, how you're feeling. They don't really ring a lot. And then your support, my mom flew back to China, being alone again with me, and all the road, there's no schedule, no treatment. The appointment, instead of 3 days to see doctor, becomes 3 months. And the road ahead seems open, very like open, and you don't know what's going on next. So you're kind of, because a part of you get lost through cancer.
Yeah.
You can no longer be that fit at the beginning as before. You can no longer do what you're passionate about doing. And then that fear of relapse, if you feel some subtle pain in the aches in your body, it will trigger your worry, anxiety for cancer relapse. And just a lot of unresolved emotions, and it's coming up. So it is really hard. And especially when you hear about other people who are fighting cancer with you, together with you, they pass away, your friend.
I have heard, you know, how people just say they have that big fight to get through. You know, you're constantly with the chemotherapy and fighting to get to the end where the doctor says, okay, I think we're good. No more treatment. Let's have a bit of a break. And you get to that point and you're kind of left floundering. You know, your life is so busy at the hospital, as you say. It's very scheduled. It's very directed for you. And then the survivorship stage is all directed by you. And that can be so hard because it's, as you've said, you've come through this diagnosis and now you're not the person who you were before a blood cancer walked into your life. You're a completely different person, you know, as you say, whether you physically lost the strength to be able to do what you loved and were passionate about, and also mentally, it takes a huge mental blow to your mental health. Yeah. And then, as you said, you can't do maybe the work that you were in before a blood cancer came into your life. And now to be left in this survivorship stage, as we call it, to go, how do I direct this? I've lost so much in my life. Where do I begin?
Yeah. It is because, you know, part of you, in a way, you lost your part of your identity through this cancer.
100%.
Just like this, yeah. COVID, you can't accept the new normal. I can't accept I'm like a constant getting sick. I used to be very healthy. I used to be very active with friends, but now I'm not. And I used to be doing really great with my job, but now I can't even do that job. So that big gap is create a big hole for me. Suddenly say, oh, who I am now, like I'm really lost. And also the expectation from others, they think, you are now, your cancer is gone,
treatment's done,
you are supposed to be go back to normal, you're supposed to feel happy. But I'm not, but I'm scared to tell people I'm not happy, because people say, you don't have cancer, why you don't happy? You're not feeling happy.
You should be happy. Yeah,
you should be happy. And then I think I tell myself, yes, I should feel happy. And also I then compared to others going through cancer, I say, I should feel happy, you know, if I think about others who are currently fighting for their life, but why I'm not happy? So it's kind of a lot of, you know, like a self-critical, and I can't accept yourself where you are now. So that's all creating all this emotional kind of a turmoil for me at that time. So it hit me really hard, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's, you're right, you know, as you said, you've gone through this and you think, why am I not happy? But I think it's also because whilst you're in treatment, it's so go, 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 and your body is something that's constantly physically recovering, that you don't get to pay the attention to your mind and to support and to tap into the, you know, I guess, good practice of mental health, because you're so busy just surviving. So when it comes into that survivorship stage, that's almost when you go, oh, okay, now I can process what the heck just happened. And that's why I'm not feeling so happy, because my mind and body now have just caught up.
Yes. And but I think that's a great first step, is your mind start showing you all these thoughts or feelings, emotions. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
what did you do? So, you know, did you change your role a little bit at work, or how did you begin to, I guess, rebuilding life post your lymphoma diagnosis?
I did I always did a weird thing. I left my work. I said, I need to search for the meaning of life. Yeah. So I actually spent kind of nearly 2 years on and off going on travels to look for what I really want in my life. Because at one stage I find, through this cancer journey, I find it opens up to me and I realize the emotions. So first thing I did is I went to Mexico, because I always very drawn to like a natural recovery after cancer, natural healing. And also over there, they do a lot of emotion healing. And that's the first time I experienced emotion healing.
I imagine, but it also be the first time for you experiencing emotions, because if in your culture it was, we just push this down. But I imagine this cancer diagnosis was the first time you, as I said to you before, split your soul open and you experienced emotion uncontrollably.
Yeah. And then from when I start this journey, when I'm in Mexico, actually the practitioner now become my close friend. First time she, you know, we start doing meditation and start doing those affirmation to start to see how great you are, which is I never done that before. I never thought I'm good. I'm being constantly tracing because I think I'm not good by achieving this. But from that, I actually start learning how to really accept all the emotions or accept where I was at that time. And I also come to terms with that. You know, this cancer journey is really put up as a stepping stone to break apart, like a peel the onion, the layers, which is not supposed to, now I think, which was not my true self, but really peeling and then to show me who I am. So by doing a lot of, because I felt up to cancer journey before, I don't really know how to self-love, how really appreciate myself. But through after the cancer, by going on doing those healings, I start really kind of looking into myself and start really value myself.
Valuing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And also during that first, you know, survivorship, I was very emotionally, very isolated, even during the, you know, because I was being isolated from my parents, from my families back home. So I also, like, I feel a lot of loneliness. So I also start going on trips, like trips without planning, go to another country to connect with strangers. And I also follow a dear friend of mine here to stand on the Federation Square to give people free hugs. Just open the arm, let people hug you. And that actually is the turning point for me, because I felt when I'm empty, but when I open my arms, when you hug people, and then you can start, you know, you can experience people's kindness and love. And they actually, that kindness and love and fill you up, your empty tank.
And
that's how I felt, you know, by embracing others, by helping others or giving others a hug, and actually helping myself. So I start, that's how I start generally work out of my, you know, emotional isolation is by just to give if I can.
You consciously make a choice to be open, it sounds like, and it sounds like you consciously chose to choose happiness, to choose to be open, to choose to, you know, rebuild your life post this diagnosis.
It is, because this is what I realized from that 2 years, is this is who I am. It may be in a point during cancer or the the initial stage of the recovery, I lost myself. But through that trip, or through by building myself, I actually find, you know, that brave me and that person always have a curiosity, and this is actually who I am. So I find that lost part back.
So through your diagnosis, you feel that you found yourself, your true authentic self.
Yes, that's my blessing. And I remember 2016 during through when I was chemo, when I, you might have the knowing, but I still feel really sad about, you know, why I have to go through this cancer and at a young age. And then I encountered two people, and the first lady told me, she said, whether now you understand or not, cancer is your blessing. I didn't quite understand at the time, but now when I look back my 4 years journey, I think it is truly my blessing.
Yeah.
To shape, you know, give me a new, to really show me what, you know, who I am and what my purpose is. And I think that's really big to my life now, is I felt, you know, I no longer, you know, live for others. This time I actually start living for myself. And that's really important.
Yeah.
And the second lady, she gave me a message. It's also very powerful, because when I was young, when everyone heard like I had a cancer, the first reaction, a lot of them, they say, oh, you are so young, you know, it is too pity, you are so young, how about your life in the future? That's how I felt. I was a victim to have cancer.
Yeah.
But that lady in Mexico, she told me, she said, you are so lucky to have cancer at a young age. And I said to her, I said, you are the first person to tell me that, and why you think that way. And she said, because now you have the awareness. And that's exactly true, because now I'm very aware of my life.
Yeah, very true. And it's, I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, for some people that hear this, it may be hard for them to agree or to see that, you know, cancer is a blessing. And I do recognize that some people have an enormous struggle with the acceptance of this because they didn't choose it. But I think the key message for those people, even if they can't see the blessing, or for the people that can see the blessing, I think it's all about flipping it, trying to mentally flip a negative into a positive. And I think I always say to people, try it, even if you don't believe it, even if you self-talk, you don't believe your own self-talk, but eventually, as you said, you keep using those positive affirmations, you keep choosing to step into the positive side of your mindset rather than the negative. I believe that can sometimes be the unlocking for people.
It is, because our mind can be trained. And our mind can't differentiate whether it's we fake to be positive, or we can train our mind, and
it's a muscle. And,
it's a muscle, and I also believe a law of attraction in a way. If we put our intention focus on positive, and positive things could happen.
Consciously choose to be positive and to see things in a brighter light than a negative. And it's not to say not to ever step into that sad and negative emotion, but it's important to make conscious steps to choose your happiness, to choose yourself.
Yeah. And I remember the doctors in Mexico told me whatever stage you are, there's always hope.
Yeah.
Whatever. And it's your choice to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I heard a quote by the famous Oprah Winfrey, and it said, you know, life is all about connecting the dots, and that there's always a thread running through all of our lives. And when you figure out what that what that thread is and what connects the dots, that's when you figure out your purpose. And I believe that's kind of what you've done. You know, you had all these dots in life before, but, and then we all have the thread, but now through your cancer diagnosis, you've been able to pull all that thread and dots together, and you're finding out your purpose of sharing your story and being open and honest with people. And
yeah, and that's why, you know, whether the listeners now, it depends on how you perceive cancer, and it's not happened to you, but it's happened for you for a good reason, if you can see that way.
Yeah.
That means, I always believe cancer is a messenger.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't tell you that your body abandoned you. It actually tells you your body needs you now. Listen, I need you. And if this is something I've learned from others as well, like if we can really take this opportunity to reflect our life in the past, you know, what habits or what relationship which may not be too healthy, you know, something we can change. Cancer is really a message to tell you is, you know, it's a time for make a change.
Yeah, it needs your support and help and attention. Yeah. Wow. Well, Esther, you've imparted just so much knowledge and just been so open with us today, and I just can't thank you enough. And, you know, your outlook and your perception on and everything that you've been dealt with is just really admirable. And I just I can't wish you anything more but the best. And I hope that, you know, today the listeners get something. They feel that they can take lots away, because I've taken away some golden nuggets from you just speaking with you today. So I can't thank you enough. As we wrap up every episode, we always like to ask our guests, are there any golden nuggets that you would like to impart to the listeners? And I know you've dropped some beautiful golden nuggets through this episode, but is there any more that you'd like to send away to the listeners?
Yeah, maybe two or three little nuggets. First one is, like, I want to re-emphasize that whatever stage you are, don't lose hope. There is always hope. And make a little steps every day, and then you will see the changes, and trust in yourself. And the second little nugget is, I learned from a dear friend of mine, is cancer is not your identity. Cancer is not who you are. Even you're going through cancer, that means it's just part of a journey. It's a, you know, it's a something you need to deal with. You are much bigger than cancer. That's what I want to say.
Yeah.
And the last nugget is, as to cancer survivors, I told Kay last time, I tend to use different terminology. First of all, I often tell people I'm a thriver.
Yeah, you are a thriver.
And secondly is, I'm a little bit sensitive to this word remission. Instead, I will tell, this is how I tell myself, is remission to me is remember my mission. So my mission, this word.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode. Firstly, Esther, it was a privilege speaking with you, and I cannot thank you enough for having a conversation with me and shedding light on topics that aren't always discussed. I hope you, the listeners, enjoyed today's episode and found the conversation with Esther just as valuable as I did. If you would like more information on our services or today's episode, please feel free to call 1-800-620-420 and somebody will be able to connect you with your local blood cancer support coordinator. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Kate Arkadiff, and you've been listening to the Leukemia Foundation's podcast, Talking Blood Cancer.